Welcome back to Crossover Daily, SI's daily NBA podcast. I'm your host, Rohan Nadkarni. Today on the show, we'll discuss the finals matchup between the Heat and the Lakers. What does it say about these teams the way they were built? And what would another finals win do for Eric Spoelstra's career? Later, we'll also look into the future of the Eastern Conference. Joining me will be GQ's Michael Pina. Let's start the show. All right, joining us now on Crossover Daily is one of the most prolific NBA writers I know. He's currently covering the NBA bubble for GQ. His work also appears in 538. Previously, he was a writer for Vice Sports and SB Nation. His work has also appeared in Sports Illustrated. It's my buddy, Michael Pina. Michael, how's it going, my man?
Ron, how are you, my guy?
Listen, it's a good day to be from the Miami metropolitan area / Fort Lauderdale / Coral Springs, Florida. I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, my man? I feel like I should ask you how you're doing.
We were talking a little bit off the air before we started recording. I feel okay, I think, all things considered. I grew up outside of Boston, for those who don't know, and which is probably everyone listening. And I still have an emotional attachment to the Boston Celtics. So heading into this series, I was very confident in how they matched up against Miami. And it just didn't go how I thought it would at all. But, you know, we move on. We all live. We all prosper.
For sure. Something I will miss from the Heat-Celtics series is the tweets from the different camps. Like every foul review or, you know, every big play or like every role player getting hyped up to like an incredible degree. Mm-hmm. That's the best part about, well, that's not the best part about, that's one of the underrated parts about a series like this is just the full on, like how much of a homer can you go while still trying to remain somewhat objective during a series like this?
Once we're this far in the playoffs, I usually, like, objectivity just goes out the window for me.
Right, right.
But normally it's been for the Celtics, like, once they got this far, they faced off against, like, LeBron. So it's right. Just like, I have no hope for victory. So I'm whatever, like, you know, I'm not getting my hopes up. I'm not super optimistic. There was, in 2018, Jeff Green, they go to game 7 and Jeff Green just, like, tears Boston's soul out of their body in that game in game 7, and obviously they did not advance to the finals. But this was a special case because I genuinely thought that Jason Tatum was the best player in the series, and he just he didn't have as good of a series as I thought he would.
It was an interesting series for him. And well, let's get to that later because I want to talk about the Celtics. I want to talk about their future. Okay. And I want to talk about Tatum. Let's start here because we finally have an NBA Finals matchup. It's going to be the Miami Heat and LeBron James on the Lakers. It's kind of like hilarious, the threads between these teams. It's a Dion Waiters Raiders revenge series. It's a Pat Riley revenge series. It's LeBron versus Pat. It's Spo versus Vogel. There are a lot of, you know, connections between these teams that are not maybe obvious at first impression. Now that you know this is the matchup, just give me like your first thoughts, your first blush. You know, what do you think of this matchup?
I think what's most interesting to me is how the two teams were constructed, actually, because I'm just like a huge nerd. And
no, I love that. Go ahead.
I mean, it's two separate ends of the spectrum. I mean, you have in LA, LeBron, you know, they clear cap space. LeBron goes there. Everybody kind of knew he was going to go there 2 years ago. And then it's just very telegraphed from that point forward that he's going to get a second superstar.
Right. Telegraphed who that superstar is going to be also. Yeah.
And, you know, they sign him to Clutch, and him is Anthony Davis. And then they trade basically the farm to get him. And, you know, that's kind of just LA exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there's really no culture, no identity. Yeah. It's just like they, you know, we didn't know who the head coach was going to be.
Right.
You know, they've kind of, there's been very little continuity, any of that. And I will give them a ton of credit. You know, they They added veteran pieces who they thought would be good fits this time of year, more so than the regular season, I think. And then during the regular season, they quickly adopted this defense first, but we're also going to like run the ball as much as possible down your throat identity. So shout out to them for that. But at the end of the day, it was just a very, you know, I think the age of the super team necessarily might be dead or dwindling for CBA reasons. But this was a, this is like a super team, but for all, I mean, it's just like two top five players. So that were acquired basically via free agency. And then just, you know, Anthony Davis was going to sign there if they didn't make that trade.
It's
so, no, go ahead.
It's hard to talk about the Clippers without sounding bitter, but it is a little frustrating when you see the other teams that made it to the conference finals. You know, the Nuggets have been together for 3 years. You know, Tatum and Brown are in their second conference finals in 3 years, and that core of Tatum, Brown, and Smart is just so cool watching them play together year after year, get deeper into the playoffs. The Heat are a little bit more of a blend, but Spo's been there forever, Dragic has been there forever, Udonis is still on the team. You know, they brought up Bam, they brought up Duncan. The Lakers, and I got a little bit of heat for this, but I feel like it's been a while since LeBron played on a team that didn't feel like LeBron plus mercenaries. And, you know, you mentioned it, like no real identity. The Lakers are kind of like a blunt object. They're just effective. They're good. They're like a tool for success. But, you know, it's a first year coach. Like Rondo and LeBron used to be rivals, and now there's this awkward partnership. Markieff Morris was closing games in the playoffs, and it just doesn't feel like a team, if I'm being completely honest.
It's an interesting construction for sure. And I think on paper, you look at some of those pieces and they just don't, I mean, they don't make a lot of sense, to be honest. Like I would imagine that they wanted some more ball handling, some more capable outside shooting than, you know, like usually LeBron has, like, you know, I guess like more prime J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, like real sharpshooters. And I don't think Danny Green is that guy anymore. I don't think KCP ever was that guy. Alex Caruso, you know, whatever. I'm never getting on that hype train. And so, yeah, it's just, it's been, I think, a combination of, without sounding like a sore loser, but like the Lakers just haven't really faced anyone. I mean, no disrespect to the Denver Nuggets, who are incredible.
I love the Nuggets, but you're right. You're right. No one, they haven't faced a team who can challenge them in the way they need to be challenged.
Right. And LeBron in particular, who's been guarding him? Like, you know, there were stretches where James Harden was like the resort option in Houston. So I think that this series coming
Carmelo
up.
Carmelo Anthony, remember that?
Exactly. Like, and shout out to me for picking against the Lakers in every single round.
Same.
Yes.
Like, Carmelo Anthony, like, was out of the league 2 years ago, last year, basically, because of his defense. And the Blazers were like, on LeBron, let's do
no, it was, yeah, it was Carmelo, because Trevor Ariza opted out of the bubble, so it's Carmelo and it's Gary Trent Jr. Right. I mean, like, that was, come on. And then PJ Tucker, God bless his soul, had to defend Anthony Davis. I mean, they abandoned their switch everything strategy because he was the only guy who could bother AD, and also, that didn't even work.
Also, the Raptors acquired PJ Tucker to be the LeBron stopper that 1 year, and I'm pretty sure they got swept. So
yeah, that didn't work out for anybody.
I'm with you. It is, I said it's been LeBron's least interesting finals run. They just haven't had anyone. They haven't faced a team that is going to force them to execute in the half court on both ends of the floor for an extended period of time. So I want to get to that a tiny bit, because I have basically made it clear I'm a Heat fan. I don't really think they're going to win this series, but I do think Spo can kind of design something that's going to make them challenge the Lakers a little bit more. On the court, do you have a sense of how you think the series is going to play out? I think I'm most fascinated in if the Lakers will play big, more so just to keep Bam off of AD. That's kind of the first thing that I think of when I think of the on-court matchup.
Well, first of all, I think that if the Lakers were to go big out of fear of Bam guarding AD, I don't think the Heat would blink. I think they would put Jay Crowder on JaVale or Jay Crowder on Dwight Howard, because those guys are just not offensive problems. And then you could switch any pick and roll with LeBron pretty comfortably, as comfortably as anyone can switch a pick and roll defending LeBron James. I think that the Lakers will ultimately have to downsize personally, because just there's so, like, on the defensive end, if you're the Lakers, I don't know who, like, I just don't know how they match up. If you have Duncan Robinson and Goran Dragic and Tyler Hero on the floor at the same time, I mean, like, they're tough. And Jay Crowder kind of came back to earth a little bit behind the 3-point line, as I thought he would.
Right.
But he could get hot again for another 4 or 5 game stretch. That's kind of just how he's been his entire career. So they have a lot of shooters, a lot of weapons. Jimmy never had like a Jimmy game in the conference finals. So I think that he's due to explode in a similar vein to how, or to what we saw against the Milwaukee Bucks. But I guess, like, I don't know. I look at Miami's defense, and I see a defense that the Lakers have not had to, like, a disciplined, organized, really strong in terms of their personnel with individual defenders defense. And I do think that the zone, I think the zone might be just the story of the bubble, honestly, when we look back at this, because the Lakers, if you can keep them in the half court, they have to shoot threes. And just like, if you're trying to beat a zone, that has been their weakness from the jump since this team was constructed. And I think that we're going to see a lot of zone, a lot of Andre Iguodala and Jimmy Butler at the top. And I mean, it's going to be fun.
Make the Lakers shoot. It's funny because I don't think I would be surprised if either of us really bought into the Rockets defense. You know, when they were playing Oklahoma City, like, there are all those numbers, like, the Rockets, would you believe they have the best defensive efficiency in the playoffs? It's like, yeah, because they're guarding Lou Dort and Steven Adams. You know, meanwhile, Portland and Denver are just frankly not defensive minded teams. They were giving up a comical number of points during the restart. The Heat, strangely enough for them, this was not their best defensive team. Like, as a defensive minded organization, it wasn't their best defensive season. But I think they're far more disciplined, like you mentioned, than any of the teams the Lakers have faced. And if they can slow the game down, you know, Boston was starting to figure out that zone towards the end of the series, but it helped that they have guys like Hayward and Jaylen Brown who can shoot from the corners. I think the Heat would live with Caruso threes and Rondo threes and Markieff Morris threes. It's going to be really interesting. I want to talk about a story that you wrote today for GQ that everyone should go check out. It's incredible. Obviously, I loved it. It's about Eric Spoelstra. you called him, I believe, the best coach in the NBA. This is obviously, you know, he's been weirdly kumbaya during his sideline interviews. You know, I almost want to see a little bit more energy from him, like during game 6 going into the fourth quarter. He's like, don't you love this? And I'm like, okay, man. Like,
no, yeah, it's a great contrast with Brad Stevens, who's just this total maniac, frothing at the mouth. Yeah.
Right. No. What? I don't want to get into pure legacy conversation here, but what do you think a finals win could do for Spo right now, or does he even need it to boost kind of his profile in the league?
So, I mean, you know, this is going to be his 5th finals appearance. I tweeted this note out with the story that you referenced. Thank you for your kind words. but in the past 50 years, the only coaches who have appeared in more finals than Spoelstra are Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, and Greg Popovich. During this run, Spoelstra leapt in front of Pat Riley in career playoff winning percentage. He has more playoff wins now than Chuck Daly, who won 2 titles with the Detroit Pistons and coached the Dream Team. I mean, he's already in the Hall of Fame. He was in the Hall of Fame. I mean, if you win 2, you're in the Hall of Fame. Right. That's just kind of how it goes, unless you're Rudy Tomjanovich, who finally just got in. Shout out to Rudy.
There we go.
But no, I mean, in terms of legacy, what I think is really fascinating about Eric Spoelstra is, like, the success is the success. And if you can win with a I mean, he was at the ground floor of the player empowerment era. He was the head coach of the big three, the Heatles, mm-hmm. LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. And to win there as consistently as he did, four straight finals appearances, and then to develop a team kind of just with such brilliance and patience and empathy and like bold creativity mm-hmm. with this group, it's just like winning in the two different, again, opposite ends of the spectrum,
right,
as he did. I think that if we talk about legacy, like Spoelstra's legacy, and he's been talking about this quite a bit, is just how much pride he takes in developing players, finding for sure. players, developing players, finding roles for them where they can like thrive. And we talk about like coaches who can do that a lot, and it's become very trite almost at mm-hmm. this point. But Spoelstra, it's so legit, man. Like Duncan right. Robinson is unbelievable, an unbelievable story. The Tyler Hero phenomenon is, it's like no one in the Heat organization is surprised by any right. of that, because they enabled him and emboldened him throughout the regular season to have the ball in his hands, to take big shots, to set up others, to run pick and roll. Like, he wasn't a spot up shooter, so it's not, this isn't like a big surprise. And I mean, Bam Adebayo is just like the crown jewel personification of Heat culture, and there is no, the sky is the limit for you. We're not going to restrict you. We see what you're capable of from watching you in practice and watching your film all the way back to when you were in high school and mm-hmm. you were ripping the ball off the glass and just taking it coast to coast. And then you weren't allowed to do that at Kentucky, so no one saw that. Like, we saw that, and we want you to be able to do that. So when Hassan Whiteside kind of, you know, gets pushed to the side.
Oh God, don't say that name.
Once Hassan Whiteside leaves, it's like, all right, this is your, like, the handcuffs are off. We're going to let you make a ton of mistakes, because Bam made a ton of mistakes. Like,
true.
The turnovers that he made during the regular season, they basically help you get to where you are right now, where he is pitching perfect games against the Celtics in the conference finals. So I think Spo's legacy is just like real, like just player development in mm-hmm. a way that is purposeful and well-intentioned.
It's authentic to him. You mm-hmm. know, it's funny. I did a story about the Heat earlier this year, and when you talk to guys, whether it's Rodney Magruder or Duncan Robinson or Kendrick Nunn, they all recognize that he's coming from a place of experience. Like, he built himself up from the video room to be the head coach of the big three. And I think they all recognize the authenticity in him to get, like, he told me an incredible story about literally going to Dwayne Wade's house to apologize to him in 2015, because he said he'd become too obsessed with the result and not focused enough on doing his job as a coach. You know, the things he talks about, what he loves about coaching, you know, it's giving guys rides home from practices if he sees them walking down the street. It's mm-hmm. he told me he used to go in on days Wayne Ellington was supposed to be off and watch him through the window of the door getting shots up. You know, I think that's what he genuinely loves about coaching. And I think it's incredible that the players recognize the way he's worked himself up. There's like a real kinship I think he has with this current roster, because I think they see a lot of themselves in each other. I want to get to the future of the East with you real quick. I touched on this a little bit yesterday. I still think Boston has arguably the best outlook of any team in the East, just by virtue of how young their core is, how much room they have to grow with Jason and Jalen, the flexibility they have, not to get into hashtag assets talk, but they do have tradable pieces in guys like, you know, Brown, if they really wanted to do it, even Kemba, if they really wanted to do it. Your outlook, not just on the Celtics, but the East in general, in your mind, do you have any scenarios on how you might see the next couple of years play out?
I agree with you that I think Boston's future is very bright, and you can look at it. You can look at their success over the past few years as, except for last year, as just like market overachievement.
Yeah, it's a bonus, really. It's like they're banking playoff experience way before they normally would have.
Right. And so I think, you know, this was I think a lot of the criticism that Jason Tatum is facing is, like, frankly absurd, because he's 22 years old and he put up a statistical line in the playoffs in a lot of different ways that we either have never seen from someone that young, or the only comps are LeBron, maybe Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant. Like, it's jarring. For people don't make deep playoff runs as first options on teams when you're that young. That just doesn't happen. So his future is just, it's ridiculous. I mean, they have their cornerstone. That is the hardest piece to obtain in the NBA. Like, you're banking on him becoming one day a top five, top six player, which is more than conceivable, if not expected. So their future is really bright. And I mean, then you got to look at, like, what is Giannis going to do in free agency? I think that is a massive question.
What is Philly going to do with Simmons and Embiid?
Yeah, 100%. In my head, I always just cross them off because sorry, I'm a hater. Giannis, is he going to stay? Is he going to go to Miami? Is he going to go to Toronto? Miami and Toronto. I think Toronto is in a little bit of a different situation because Lowry's old, and
I think this was their last gasp with the Lowry core. I really hope Toronto gets Giannis. I think that would be great for the league, great for, like, a reward for Masai for just the management he's done throughout his career. I think that would be really interesting if he went there.
It would be fascinating. I think that Giannis might have watched Pascal Siakam in the second round and been like, checking them off the as an option. I kid. But what he does is obviously up in the air. I just think, like, Bam is absurd. He's so good. Like, it's really you can't even say anything else about Bam and just his incremental growth just on a month-to-month basis. Having him and Tyler Hero for the next 10 years is just, like, a really fascinating duo to build on. So I think that their future is super bright. And they're obviously in the finals right now with a coach who, I mean, another just thing about Spoelstra that I think is really fascinating. He's 49 years old, and Greg Popovich won his first championship when he was 50 as the head coach of the Spurs. So cool. If you just look at it like that.
How about that nugget you just dropped? How about that nugget, man, you just dropped? There we go.
So you're
hyping me all the way back up.
So if you look at it like that, it's like, that was 1 million years ago when Greg Popovich won his first championship. So the future is just like, this could be just like the ground floor of a whole different era for Eric Spoelstra. So, I mean, am I missing any teams like... That made, like, the Pacers? Are we, like, I don't think
Oladipo reportedly wants out. I think we hit the top four. I think it's going to be the Celtics, Raptors, Bucks, and Heat that really kind of determine the next 5 or 10 years. And I think that the Celtics and the Heat have some more playoff series in their future.
I think you're right. And I really hope that I hope Kemba doesn't miss 4 straight 3-pointers with 4 minutes to go. That would be great.
Well, I tell you what, we'll have to do this again because I think undoubtedly there are going to be some more matchups. Michael, thank you so much for coming on Crossover Daily, hanging out. The day after your beloved Celtics losing in the Eastern Conference Finals, it takes a lot of guts, a lot of courage on your part. We appreciate you being a good sport.
Appreciate you, man.